Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Audible is presented by Trader Joe's. Discover more about Trader Joe's by listening to their podcast, Inside Trader Joe's, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Go get Trader Joe's tuna fish. It is the best tuna I've ever had. I eat it almost every day for lunch.
There you go. That's your Bruce Feldman Trader Joe's tip of the week. Welcome to The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman. This time we are not recording in the middle of the night after the national championship game. Bruce, the transfer portal is pretty much the dominant topic in college football right now. It is constantly spinning, and we have our own in-house expert, Max Olson, coming on to talk about it.
Nobody better than Max. He is immersed in the portal it's amazing to follow him and just how much stuff is cycling out. And so we're going to dig into the weeds and also do some big picture stuff with him.
All right. So let's get to Max. And then when we come back from the interview, we will answer your emails. All right, Bruce, our friend Max Olson is here. He is the Athletics transfer portal guru. He's following it. He's tracking it. He does his 25 best available players. And Max, just you and I text about this stuff all the time.
Stu, before we get into this, Portal Authority Guru, I think Portal Authority is the best way to go with it. Credit to Andy Staples. Is that an Andy one, Max?
Yeah, it's an Andy one. He put out a call to folks on Twitter, and I guess he felt very strongly that's the best one. So I have no choice but to accept it.
It sounds a little bit too much like the bus station, but we can run with it. But yeah, this. I felt like last summer I had a pretty good handle on the most notable names, Kenneth Walker, Charlie Brewer, although that didn't pan out. But right now, this year, it's just dizzying. How do you keep up with it? Like, give us a little window into your work process here. Because, like, there's been a lot where I'm like, big names, like, or notable names. I'm like, when did that happen?
Yeah, it's a lot of... it's fun. First of all, like I have a lot of people say to me like, oh man, you must be tired of this stuff. It must be killing you. It's like, I think this is pretty fun. I think that having some semblance of free agency in this sport, has made December and January, which was already a recruiting heavy time in the sport, but I think it's made it a little bit more exciting. I understand why there's definitely some coaches and probably some fan bases that don't find this very exciting because they're losing players and they think that, this is all kind of a slippery slope to really messing up the sport or whatever. But, certainly I think we're reaching the point now, like you guys have heard for years, coaches talk about like, oh, this transfer portal is, a really big problem and stuff. I think we've reached the point where like there's no point in kind of sitting around and complaining about it. Like you need to get in there and go get some players. Now, if you're losing guys, you kind of need to, get as good as you give when it comes to this stuff now, because, certainly it has, there's just so many players out there now and there's so many scholarship players, and there's certainly a few different reasons for that. With the eligibility freeze and a lot of super seniors out there, there's a ton of those guys that are in the portal, for it's 1 year pickups, but, there's a lot of things that have gone into how we've gotten this far, but certainly we're just seeing so many players right now wanting to bet on themselves and whether that's because they're not getting enough playing time or whatever, wanting to make a move and getting a ton of offers and having a crazy recruitment and all that stuff. And so it's been a lot of fun to keep up with every day, and keep an eye on the portal. And then you have to follow all these guys and turn on alerts for their tweets and stuff because they're tweeting out offers or visits or whatever. And, the one thing that a coach told me a couple weeks ago that I thought was true is You know, in a lot of ways, this is just like recruiting, the actual process of it, except that recruiting is usually like you spend 1 to 2 years on a kid, and now recruiting for players in the portal takes 2 weeks.
Max, how much is your process like where either you see somebody's actually in the portal and then you follow them both on Twitter and I assume
they're on Instagram now too. Yeah, you have to kind of keep up with that.
Yeah, so you're jump. Do you have somewhere in your house, maybe it's in the baby's room, a huge whiteboard with names of people who are in Sharpie who are written with like, okay, here are the schools that they are either following or the coaches who now are all of a sudden are following this kid. So how are you tracking this in terms of, because a lot of this stuff is so volatile in terms of like, you know, there's guys you hear that are going to go someplace, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, who knows if they're going to go there? Because it's not like it's just so freewheeling at this point.
Yeah, you know, I think part of it. So in doing the top 25, which we've now narrowed it down to a top 20 because these guys are starting to commit, and now you know as we're getting to class time now. It's time to get on campus and get out of the portal. But, you know, a lot of big old spreadsheet, big master spreadsheet. If it ever got deleted, I would lose my mind probably of just keeping track of guys. Like you see when players go in the portal, they're either going up or down, right? They're either going to, you know, if they're a power five guy that didn't get much playing time, probably a decent chance that unless they were a big recruit or have big potential or whatever, had one good year or something, they're probably going down to a group of five program or maybe even an FCS one. In putting this top 25 together, you're kind of trying to find the guys that are going up, the guys that, whether they're FCS players or group of five players that, as soon as they go in, they're going to have all these offers. I think we've even seen some, you know, freshman players at the power five level who go in, like Makai Wingo from Missouri, who has one good season there. And then all of a sudden, everybody in the country wants him, and he was a three-star guy a year ago, right? So it's hard to kind of predict sometimes which ones are going to blow up and which ones aren't, but I think if you follow it long enough, you kind of start to get a sense of this is a player that has either maybe their position of need, they have good measurables, they have good production. You can kind of start to take a guess on who's going to want to go after these guys. But yeah, I've got a spreadsheet here of like, you're looking at players that, you know, maybe could make the top 25. I think 145 of them have now committed. So like there's probably 250 names on that thing. Like, and that's out of, you know, more than 1,000 scholarship players that are in there. So, just cause a player goes in doesn't mean he's automatically going to get a ton of offers and go to a better school and stuff. But, we're trying to kind of keep track of the ones that you feel like have a chance to blow up. And it is crazy this year, especially with, all the coaching changes that have happened, this year, how that's affecting a lot of schools like, you know, LSU or USC or Florida trying to take a lot of players out of the portal.
So is our assumption that, you know, you mentioned it's kind of getting to crunch time here in terms of if you want to get enrolled at your new school and start classes, you got to do that here pretty soon, if not already. Is it your assumption that this craziness will die down for a couple months and then we'll go through another round of this after spring practice?
I think so. I think that we're probably getting close to, you know, by the end of the month here, a lot of these guys that, you know, certainly the ones that want to go through spring ball with their new team are making their decisions. And I've talked to some players who are going through this process and they commit and then the next day they show up on campus and start classes. Like it's, these things move really, really fast and they kind of have to if you want to go through winter workouts with your new team. And so when we get past January, yeah, there probably still will be some players going in and maybe some really prominent ones, but the guys that are still out there are kind of the ones that maybe they have work to do academically or they're going to stay in school and finish their degree and then, you know, go grad transfer here in May. I think we'll still see, like you guys remember Joe Burrow obviously was like a very notable like post-spring transfer. I think there still will be some guys that, you know, don't like where they're at on the depth chart at the end of spring ball or lose a battle or whatever. And there probably will still be another rush of this in April and May. But yeah, this January period was was really wild. And now we're kind of reaching that point. It's kind of like like when you flip through Zillow and you see a house that's been on the market for 60 days, you're kind of like, why are they still in there? What's wrong with it? Right. Like there's the players that have been in the portal for a couple months now, it could be they have an academic situation or transfer credits or whatever. But they're still obviously with Caleb Williams and Jackson Dart, and O'Shawn Mathis and Travis Dye, there's still some very premium players out there, as we tape this.
Max, before we get into some of the teams you like who have done well, you had mentioned Florida in passing with Billy Napier moving on. It seems like to me the Ragin' Cajuns have been picked apart their roster. Now, I don't know if it's just anecdotally. I know of four recently, but it seems like there's been a bunch that have, a couple have gone with him, a couple have gone to LSU, it's like how much are you charting who is like not just where they're going but where they're leaving?
Yeah, trying to keep track of all of that. And, certainly, in the spring or summer here, Bruce, I'm sure we'll put together kind of that top 50 or whatever of who are the most impactful guys out there. But that's certainly one of those trends we're seeing right now. And certainly like the Caleb Williams thing, if he goes to USC, that would be a big shining example of it. But the Louisiana Florida thing has been unique because a lot of what's fueled the portal this year, and there have been some unique ones like Wyoming or, Hawaii or Colorado, where you have some programs losing a ton of their best players. But a lot of the kind of the big names in the portal are being fueled by coaching changes. And you're seeing these players want to explore their options. In the case of, Louisiana, they've had a lot of really good players put their names in, led by Osiris Torrance, who's going to Florida with that staff. I think there was probably some of those guys that maybe the new Florida staff said we're not sure if they're a take for the SEC, and some of them I've seen end up at LSU and other places. And so that part's been interesting, but I think that I don't know if you guys feel like that's right or wrong. I'm sure to the Louisiana, Ragin' Cajun fans, that this feels very wrong. But I do kind of wonder if that's going to be a factor now and almost come up more in these coaching searches, is can you hire someone who's, going to bring players with them?
Well, I think what you're seeing is not good for the Group of Five. Like first of all, everybody conflates, when we talk transfer portal, a lot of times what people are complaining about is actually the one-time exception. The transfer portal's been around for a few years. What kicked it into overdrive was now everybody can transfer once and be immediately eligible. And I feel like when you still had to sit out a year, oftentimes Group of Five benefited from a guy who can't crack the starting lineup at Alabama goes and is a star for... Now it seems like it's working the other way. Now that you can plug a hole immediately, a lot of the guys on your list are star Group of Five players who are getting called up to the big leagues, if you will. And I don't know how much it's still working in the other direction.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that there's been a lot of, in doing this, in tracking this, there's been a ton of Group of Five players that have made my top 25 and have, commanded big offers. It's always funny to see how that works. You see those Group of Five players when they go in the portal. A lot of times these guys didn't have a very exciting recruiting process. Yeah. They only had a couple offers. And so oftentimes those are the players that are tweeting out every single offer they get after they go in the portal, because this is, even in talking with, Cameron Ward, the incarnate Ward quarterback who's going to Washington State with his coach, like he had one offer in high school. And so it was to go take official visits to places is something you didn't really get to do as much. And so especially, when these Group of Five players are getting a lot of Power Five offers and a lot of demand, I'm sure that probably other guys at that level see that and say, well, I'm a really good player. I have starting experience, or I have 1 year left or whatever. And it probably encourages them a little bit to think, maybe I should throw my name in there and see what happens. Now, I guess we'll see how much that actually pays off, right? Like you're going to see some Power Five schools taking Group of Five players. And if those guys like aren't winning starting jobs or aren't even cracking the two deep, then you're kind of, is that a good use of a scholarship compared to taking a high school player? Probably not.
There's a good poster for that right now. Is your number three guy, Isaiah Nair, a 1,000-yard receiver at Wyoming. I feel like he is treating this like recruiting. He has committed to Tennessee, but he's still taking visits to Ole Miss and USC.
Sounds like he's taking one to Texas today too. Yeah.
He's enjoying being recruited.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, and that from talking to coaches, they say like that guy's a freak. Like that guy should be at Power Five level. And there's going to be some of those players too that just you know, when they put their names out there, coaches are going to turn on the tape and say, whoa, this guy can play here for sure.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I feel like this really kicked in with Vernon Adams. Vernon Adams was at Eastern Washington, obviously was at an FCS. He lit up some Pac-12 schools. Then Oregon took him, and he played really well there. Then, and I thought about this when you said a minute ago, Max, about like the guys who never got recruited and they really embrace it. You know, right after Vernon Adams, you had another kid from the same league. Just his recruiting stock blew up, and then all of a sudden, you know, he ends up at Oregon. It didn't work out as well. But it was like there was that, and then you started even to see, I remembered Garrick Dieter, who like tore up the MAC at Bowling Green, and then he went to Alabama, and he had a nice career, and he's in the NFL now. I'm guessing he probably would have been in the NFL if he, you know, like certainly there's tons of NFL players who came from the MAC, but I think there are guys who are like, hey, I would like to try to, you know, go up against elite defensive backs every day, and maybe it'll be better for my development and those things. So I think it's an interesting dynamic. I want to correct. I think, Stu, you had said earlier in the podcast, like, Kenneth Walker was, like, a notable. He wasn't really a notable at this time. You know, he was a guy that most people were not talking about, you know, leaving Wake Forest.
No, I was giving you guys a compliment. You knew how good he was.
And we didn't even have him high enough on
Yeah, like I didn't know anything
about
him.
But that was, but in truth, Stu, that was coming from the Michigan State staff. Mm-hmm. They, when they saw him, then they were okay. They were big on him. What I wanted to ask Max is, who are some guys now that you never heard of, like December 1st, who all of a sudden you're like, ooh, I didn't realize that guy's such a good player?
That's a good question. I think that there are some guys you kind of like you saw, like Jacob Cowing from UTEP is a guy you'd catch on TV a little bit, or you'd look at the national standings and see he's, you know, top 10 at receiving and say, oh, that's interesting. I wonder, like, oh, they found a good one there. And then he goes in the portal and has all these offers and stuff. Like, the entire Virginia offensive line pretty much went in the transfer portal after Bronco Mendenhall quit there. That was interesting to kind of see where all those guys would shake out. You know, you watch them this year, and like their
offensive linemen are hard though. Like, yeah. Because, you know, like Dane Brugler has his mock draft today. He has Icky from NC State number one. I'd be lying if I said I knew about Icky until I started working on a story talking to ACC defensive coaches a year ago. Like, so it's like, right. I don't think we know, like, at least like you're saying, Max, like when it comes to TFL stats or different things, you're going to see the names at least. But when it comes to offensive linemen, I think unless they're on a big school, I think we'd all be lying if we said
and
we knew.
Coaches,
knew much
even
about
with
them.
Those guys, they're still guessing on them, right? As you've written about, Bruce, the evaluation part of that is super hard. And sometimes you're just looking for a guy that's a certain size and has a little bit of experience. I think a good example would be like Wyoming. So, like, I don't know how much you guys watch Wyoming this year. I can't say I watched them a ton. If I watched them, I don't know that I would have been able to identify that, oh, they've got, you know, they've got a running back that'll go to Arizona State, and they got a wide receiver that'll go to Tennessee, and they've got a DB that'll go to Oklahoma, and another DB that'll go to UCLA. Like, it's interesting, some of those players they go in, and both of their quarterbacks also left.
And those weren't even the best player on the team. The best player is going to the Senior Bowl. Like,
right.
He's going
right.
to the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. So, or, you know, same with Hawaii. Like, Hawaii is, you know, and certainly they went through their coaching change, and this was part of it, but...
Oh, this that know, exodus Hawaii's... started before the coaching change.
For sure. Exactly. But, you know, they have players going to, you know, Oklahoma and UCLA and Cincinnati. It's kind of like you haven't really heard those names unless you really watch them or really intensely a fan of their of you know, that team. But then once they go in the portal, suddenly everybody wants them, and there's kind of this demand. And is that just because they have a positional need, or is that because they turn on the tape and love it? I don't always totally know, but it does make these guys kind of famous overnight in some cases.
Guys, you're describing Wyoming. I mean, I'm listening to you rattle off these names. You would think Wyoming was the reigning Mountain West champs. They went 7-6 last year. Right. They lost. They got shut out by Fresno State. They lost 14-3 to New Mexico. They did close strong with a blowout win over the eventual Mountain West champ, Utah State, and they put up 52 on Kent State in the bowl game. But I mean, I don't know. Did they underachieve? They've got all these big Power Five guys on the team. I don't know. Hey, so number one, Caleb Williams.
Yep.
I think once Jackson Dart entered the portal, we assumed he would be a Trojan by now. So what's your, you know, read on why there hasn't been that announcement yet?
Yeah, and Bruce, you could probably speak to this a little bit better, but it has been curious. I think we were sort of expecting that Caleb Williams would make that announcement last week, and it's easy to kind of look at this and kind of speculate, connect the dots here a little bit, because it is kind of a big game of musical chairs, and especially with the quarterbacks, and say, oh, with the guys out there, you would think that Caleb Williams is going to USC, and you know, Ole Miss really needs one, so you'd assume Jackson Dart's going there. But that's also kind of the fun and intrigue of this stuff, is maybe those guys could pull some surprises here. Maybe, you know, maybe Jackson Dart would rather be at OU. Maybe Caleb Williams has found a better spot than SC. I would still assume that it's going to be USC. I'm not quite sure why it's taken, you know, an extra week or longer to get that figured out. But, you know, it's been interesting. And you know, in regular recruiting, this stuff is dominated so much by, like, the crystal balls now. With this, I think it is fun that there's a little bit more intrigue and wondering, like, well, who else is potentially in the mix there. Why do you think it hasn't happened yet, Bruce?
I mean, I would be very surprised if he doesn't go to USC. So from everything I had heard was, yeah, Caleb really likes Lincoln. He bought into Lincoln Riley a few years ago. He obviously had success this year. But I think his dad is very involved in the process. And the biggest thing I heard is, who can develop my son the best to get him very ready for the NFL? So I think they are doing their due diligence again. I mean, from what I had heard, I know he obviously had visited UCLA. That's been reported. I know that was a consideration. I know, at least I was told, Wisconsin was a consideration. I don't know how
what? Much the Badgers. Please make that happen. That would be so fascinating.
Hey, by the way, there was once a quarterback who transferred to Wisconsin. Yes. Who could run, who did really, really well from there. So,
talking
but
about
I don't
Danny
know.
O'Brien? Or are you talking about?
No, you know, that's the crazy one, because he was actually really good where he was before, and then he didn't do anything when he got there.
That's right.
Put Caleb Williams in the Wisconsin offense.
Handing it off to Braylon Allen. Good support there.
I mean,
I would be very, very surprised if Caleb Williams does not announce he is going to USC. I mean, from everything I heard, you know, like, I think there was a little bit of turbulence, I think, at some point, not with Caleb, but maybe just of, you know, how Lincoln's exit unfolded. But I would be very surprised if he does not end up a Trojan very, very soon.
I mean, he already got his receive, you know, he already landed
well, one of his receivers.
One of his receivers from Oklahoma.
Mario Williams is going with him. Yeah, it's funny too. Like, so Jackson Dart and his tight end Michael Traeger taking these visits together to Oklahoma and Ole Miss, and it made me realize too. Like, these guys keep posting photos from their photo shoots from the visits and stuff. You have to think, like, oh, you know, these freshmen didn't get to go on visits either, you know, because of the pandemic last year. So some of these young guys that you know, kind of had a weird recruiting process last year, I'm sure they're kind of enjoying being able to actually go through it and take visits, because you couldn't do that last summer.
I think what the portal does too here is what people like lose sight of is, just because you commit doesn't mean you are on the team, right? So, I mean, like, we're talking about Caleb Williams a little bit. The UCLA quarterback situation is very fascinating in this regard. DTR, who they like and had played well, but a lot of people assumed he was going to go to the NFL. Mm-hmm. Then you had Dylan Gabriel commit there. He was about to start school on, like, the Monday, and then on the eve of that, Oklahoma reaches out because they get wind Caleb Williams is going to leave. And obviously there's a connection with Jeff Lebby's offense and Dylan Gabriel, and Dylan Gabriel had a ton of success at UCF. So he puts the brakes on going to UCLA and starting class the next day, and he goes to Oklahoma. Jackson Dart, who played against UCLA in that rivalry game, ends up, he chose USC over UCLA. That's what it came down to. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, all right, is, you know, where is he going to end up? Then DTR decides, I'm staying. And, you know, where does this mean Lane Kiffin gets another ex-USC quarterback? I don't know. It's just like the dominoes in high school are crazy when it comes to quarterbacks. I feel like they're even crazier with this because there's just a lot more uncertainty and it's happening in a much shorter space of time.
And I think when it comes to the quarterback stuff, and I know that in a lot of ways the quarterback stuff is probably the most fascinating to people about all the portal movement. And last year's transfer portal class of QBs was overall maybe not a very exciting group. I mean, certainly Bailey Zappe was, you know, extremely productive, and, you know, Hendon Hooker ended up being a good pickup. Jack Cohn did a good job. But this class is different. This one's been crazier. It's been a lot more prominent guys, a lot more proven guys. And it does seem like in some of these situations, you're kind of having to bet the farm a little bit. I mean, certainly at a place like Nebraska, like, they needed to get the transfer QB take right. Otherwise, you know, you're going to have a rough year and potentially, you know, have to lose your job there. Like, it does seem like the stakes there are really high for some of these. And even for Brent Venables taking over Oklahoma, like, you know, Caleb Williams goes in the portal, and yeah, they put out these statements saying we want him to come back, but at the same time, you have to hedge and take somebody because you don't want to end up empty-handed here. So they take Dylan Gabriel, not knowing if they can get Caleb Williams. After UCLA takes Dylan Gabriel, not knowing if DTR is coming back, you have to make these really critical decisions here in kind of a stressful way.
One thing that I think is worth, you know, kind of underscoring here, and you and I, Max, we did our impact rankings last, you know, it's kind of ongoing, but I think maybe even more so than with high school kids prospects coming in, I think there is a little bit of, yeah, this kid's super talented, but then, you know, you and I were both at the coaches convention for a couple of days last week, and you start hearing backstory on certain transfers and you're like, ooh, this guy is amazingly talented, but he also has either big academic issues and or big emotional issues or maturity issues. And there was a guy we had in our top 10 last year, mm-hmm. and I think at one point in top 5.
We didn't know what to do with him.
We didn't know what to do. We knew there were issues. He never played it down at Georgia. You know, by all accounts, he probably has first-round NFL talent. But I think there are a handful of guys who it's like fans get really excited about. And even the new staff goes, well, it's going to be this way or whatever, because they just want to get the player there. And then all of a sudden, once they kind of start, you know, unwrapping the package, they're like, ooh, we got some issues here. And I think that happens. And so I'm curious, because you talk to coaches too, like, how much have you kind of factored in backstory or what you've heard into your rankings about, you know, I know there's one particular guy you and I have had extensive conversations about in this class about mm-hmm. that. But like, how much has that come up with a lot of these guys behind the scenes?
Yeah, you have to ask around. I mean, it's easy to just say, oh, this guy has, you know, had a 1,000-yard season and he's, you know, says he's got these offers and stuff. But you actually do have to kind of like find out what the deal is. And there are some players you ask about. And this is why it's kind of not free agency, because they're some guys aren't really free to move. Like, they don't have the right situation. Like, you have to be on track to, you know, towards your degree at various points in your career. And so some guys are making moves here and they're not leaving as graduate transfers, and there's a lot of grade issues or transfer credit issues and stuff, and that leads to some of these players kind of getting stuck in the portal. There are players that have gone in, and I know a coaching staff was excited about them, and I check in with them a week or two later and they're like, the transfer, like, the credits situation is kind of a mess. Don't think we can take him and stuff. And there was one player who committed this week, and a coach texted me right away and was like, there's no freaking way that guy's eligible. And so there's still, there is kind of that, there is some risk taking to that too, which is maybe why you take extra guys, just not being totally certain if a guy's going to be able to work out or not. But that's part of the speed dating of all this, that you a guy goes in there and you want to follow him right away and offer him right away and get him on your campus right away and get him committed as soon as possible. But certainly in some cases, there's a reason why the guy went in the portal, right? And sometimes you find that out once they actually get to your campus.
Yeah, and you also find out, like, So it's interesting. The transfer portal has become, for some people, if too many guys transfer from one school, or a guy, like, why would he be transferring? It becomes like a bit of a referendum on, hey, what's going on that at that program? And then you find out, well, he couldn't get into grad school, so he had to grad transfer. You know, he had to go somewhere else for grad school. Or that guy was a, you know, he was a good player, but he was kind of a locker room malcontent, and so they're not all that sorry to see him go. And of course, we're not going to, I mean, these are college players, right? These aren't NFL players. We're not going to run anonymous quotes from coaches saying that guy's a troublemaker. You know, like, so that's a part of this. I don't know. It's kind of like in recruiting.
Well, you can't and look, say, like we, yeah. Let's be clear. Like, there's also the money part of this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that every guy that goes in the portal is getting a sweet NIL deal to go somewhere, but
some of them are.
Really prominent guys are. Yeah, a couple. Some of the really prominent.
Well, there was
guys
a pretty interesting window into that with Jaden DeLora. The not Jaden DeLora.
Cameron Ward going to Washington State.
Ward goes from Incarnate Ward to Washington State, and one of the Washington State fan sites interviewed some of their distinguished former players, and they just described exactly how it worked. They were already putting together what we're kind of informally referring to as slush funds. They're illegal. They get a couple businesses to pony in some money for endorsement deals for athletes. They catch wind that this guy's interested. You know, I'm sure the coaches told them, hey, this guy's really good. We could really use him. And within like a few days, they put together like a package deal for this guy. Totally above board, as far as I know.
And he gets to campus, and he gets a GMC truck as soon as he gets to campus. Yeah, that's kind of how this stuff is.
Isn't it amazing? The SMU, the stuff that led to the death penalty for SMU is, if you are above board about it and you know, check the right boxes on compliance, is now allowed.
So there's definitely that. There's some issues with all this stuff. There's kind of that underside of it of, are players just like, you know, being like the idea was that NIL was not about inducements to come to your school, but obviously we know that that's where this is all heading in regular recruiting and transfer recruiting. So there's that part of it, and are these best guys kind of going to the highest bidder? I don't know. I mean some of that stuff, once they commit and get on campus, then they announce their sponsorship deals and stuff like that, and you kind of find out. I'm sure for big guys, you know, these big names, that's part of it. And then there's obviously the tampering that's going on, and you just, you know what's going on. It doesn't mean that coaches are directly DMing kids, or you go through other people. But there's a lot of that stuff going on and kind of behind the scenes, and it does affect where the players are ending up and stuff, but I don't know that all that stuff is necessarily wrong. It comes with how competitive this market has become for these players.
Max, can I put you on the spot?
Okay. Yeah, let's go.
Whether you say yes or no, I'm going to do it. So.
All right.
So names, I think no, that's not what I'm asking. So I think if a lot of our listeners, and if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a pretty serious college football fan. You know that LSU and Brian Kelly have gotten, I think it's almost a dozen,
like,
transfers.
Now.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. You know, Arkansas has landed some really good players, especially out of the SEC, as well as Hazelwood from Oklahoma. Who is a school or two that you're like, people don't realize they're, and again, South Carolina got Austin Stogner and Spencer Rattler. We know about them. But is there a school or two that you're like, they're doing a, like, because again, you and I talked some about Michigan State. At least we talked a lot last year about, in the offseason, about Kenneth Walker. But it wasn't like we were talking about everything.
Who's this year's Michigan State is what he's asking.
Who are some schools, maybe not quite to that degree, but you think people need to really take notice of?
Yeah, I think South Carolina's done a great job. There have been some guys that I really liked, some kind of, like, you know, under the radar guys that they've taken that I thought those were impressive wins. I like Antoine Wells and Devonte Reed. I know, you know, Florida State's certainly one of those schools, and they were last year. Florida State's one of those schools that's trying to rebuild their roster through the portal in a serious way. And I think they've gotten really good at it. And you know, they took Jared Verse, who, you know, was one of the best defensive players in the portal this year. I think their evaluation piece is really good, and I think they've brought in some good players again. And that seems like that's going to be a really important deal for them as they try to fix that team, much like Mel Tucker, you know, the approach he took at Michigan State. You mentioned Arkansas, Bruce. I think that was a good one. Ole Miss does a good job, I think, overall when it comes to recruiting the portal. And they were able to bring in some players for the 21 season that I think helped them a lot. And I think they're certainly, if they can get Jackson Dart and Michael Trigg, that's going to be a huge deal. But they've already picked up some good players. I think that this is... So I want to ask you guys, do you think that's just going to be the norm, or is this just kind of a phase that we're going through here?
I think it's the total of the norm, because you're not putting the toothpaste back in the tube. I think what is going to be harder now, right before we did this podcast, I was talking to an offensive coordinator somewhere who was the kind of, I don't say exasperated, but just kind of like talked about how intense this all is. He was like, I'm scrambling. He goes, and then I got to talk to this 2024 quarterback. And there's just a lot of stuff that I think coaches, and I don't think they're saying like, woe is me, but I think the new norm is here. And I think they are navigating all of the roster management issues, right? And so I think what's really an interesting window into this, look at Ohio State, their quarterback room, especially. And I know there's other positions, obviously, but quarterback, you really can only play one. So they had C.J. Stroud, who they were high on, and two other guys who were very highly touted when they came there. And then all of a sudden, the NIL wins blow up, and they pluck you know, a highly, highly touted quarterback out of Texas to leave a year early, basically leaves his high school program behind, doesn't play a down, and then ends up going back.
He had a couple good handoffs.
Yeah, okay, doesn't throw a pass.
Yeah.
Then ends up going, you know, transferring to Texas, where, you know, he was looking at before all this stuff blew up, and then they end up getting a commitment from Devin Brown, who was kind of an under-the-radar guy till he blew up at the Elite 11, was committed to USC, and then he ends up, you know, obviously there's a coaching change at USC, and he ends up now at Ohio State. It's just wild, the vacuum that happens in, how quickly, and I think we're just going to see more and more of it.
Well, okay, Bruce, let's put it this way. I think that you know LSU personnel incredibly well from your years of covering them, right? So this is probably just a one-time thing for LSU, right? I don't really know that LSU is a school that should be taking 10 players a year out of the portal. And I talked to a lot of coaches that say they used to might maybe say we're going to save 3, 4, 5 spots, and now they say we're going to save 8 to 10. And there definitely are a lot of programs that kind of look at the landscape and say this is how we should you know, roster build going forward. I don't think LSU should be one of them.
No, but I think two things happened with LSU. One, they were going to go heavy into the portal on the offensive line room, you know, no matter who was the head coach there. I think the parts where, like, you had guys leave, right? So they knew a coaching change was coming. You had guys who were leaving. So I think you had a bunch who were, now LSU's always had a bunch of three and outs and really good players leave for the NFL. No one's surprised that Stingley's left. Eli Ricks, he ended up transferring to Alabama. That was, you know, he'd known Ogeron since he was a little kid in Southern California. But then there was like a bunch of others that, you know, you see receivers leave. Mickey Joseph was on that staff. I think one of them, you know, ended up transferring to Nebraska to go play for him. Yeah, but I think there's certain parts of there where it's like, okay, you have... You know, D linemen, they got a good D lineman, but it was like, that's not a room that was like had, you know, a glaring need. Defensive back, now they had guys transfer. I mean, you mentioned, like, I think Arkansas got a great pickup in Dwight McLaughlin. Yeah. I know how good the LSU guys thought he is. So, you know, between the DB room, which got depleted by guys leaving early for the NFL or transferring, and then you have a really depleted O-line room. And I think they probably need to take, two or three more O-linemen, because they were just, their numbers were not going to be good, because you had a bunch of guys who decided to stay for the extra year, and they missed on a lot of guys. And plus, you also had an O-line turnover. Like, the one guy who stayed on the staff is the O-line coach, but he only got there right before the spring. So I think there was a bunch of stuff that kind of was circumstantial there with a new coach. And I think what you're going to see is common, though, is new coaches are going to be much more active in the portal. And I think that's a big factor too.
I think we're seeing that with USC right now, certainly too. I probably wouldn't necessarily be their approach going forward, but you look at the way it all lays out.
But USC was very active in the portal last year.
It's true. Helton was as well. That's certainly true. But the way that when you're taking over a job now, as much as some people are trying to get a head start on these things, so many players are just signed and done at the early signing period now. So when you go into January, you're working with a much smaller pool of talent. And in a lot of ways, yeah, you're going to be competitive for the guys that are out there. But maybe it does make sense to take transfers, especially if you have position of need and maybe you need a one-year guy or whatever. But maybe this is going to be for these new staffs it's not like Brian Kelly or Lincoln Riley or those guys have seen more than a workout or two of their team. They don't really know what they need, but you look at the scholarship numbers and figure we've got to get some guys in here, get some bodies. And so it does seem like going to the portal for these new staffs is kind of the easy solution now compared to trying to chase guys, to that February signing day.
I still think that a lot of this stuff is going to normalize itself. It's very new. The novelty of being able to transfer and play right away is still, you just got legalized this past summer. And so there's a lot of success stories, but there's also going to be a lot of guys who saw that their friend got a good offer. So they entered the portal and turned out that they didn't find a better destination. That could affect that side of it. And then the coaches are going to have to trial and error, figure out like what the right mix is. You know, if you go too heavy on transfers and too many of them don't pan out, now you're like, well, you know, now we didn't solve that hole and we lost our chance to bring in some more high school kids. So that could normalize itself a little bit. But also to your guys' point about new coaches, it kind of extends into the second year. I'm looking at Auburn, right? Brian Harsin gets in there. In his first season, he goes 6-6. And they've had, since the end of this regular season, 20 players either transfer out or transfer in, which is a combination of, you know, you can tell, like, some of these guys probably didn't like the new staff. And so now they're, for instance, they've got a wide receiver who's going to UCF, right, to go play for Gus Malzahn again. And then Brian Harsin's looking at his roster going, this guy stinks, this guy stinks, this guy stinks. We need help. And he maybe didn't have a chance to really assess that until he's actually gone through a full season with it. So, yeah, what Brian Kelly's doing right now, he might be doing that again next spring once he gets a better sense of his roster.
Well, what I think is kind of an interesting point towards what you're saying, Stu, is I remember one thing that I always heard about from other coaches about Bill Snyder was he had an incredibly high batting average on junior college transfers where – a lot of coaches I know are like, you're lucky if you can be 50-50 on that, you know, and we're not talking about stars. You're talking about just guys who are productive players.
Charlie Weiss destroyed the Kansas football program over bad.
Well, that's a right. Little bit what I was thinking was you get into this frame of all of a sudden now you're taking one-offs, or maybe they're guys who have a couple years of eligibility, but some of these guys are 1 year. Like I forgot which of the linemen LSU's taken is a good FCS player. I think he only has 1 year left. I think. Is that right, Max?
I'm drawing a blank here. Which one are we talking about?
It's the guy from Tennessee State.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's a guy who started 40 games there and he's a one-year transfer.
So
yeah.
You either have guys who they're going to be filling the gap for 1 year, or you may end up with like, you know, a bunch where it's like, hey, you know, we're going to try it with this guy. But then that's a roster spot you basically have, and it's like, you're not going to have as much opportunity to develop the guys behind them if this is what you're playing. So it's an interesting, and this isn't unique to LSU. This is, I think this is something that a lot of coaches are going to have to be kind of sorting out what the risk reward of taking somebody in for 1 year and then, okay, is it worth it? You know, obviously in the case of this player, we're talking about, you know, I've heard he's a bright guy who's got a lot of experience and he's going to be there for the spring. There'll be some of those that, you know, we were talking about before where they will be guys post-spring who will have to learn a system on the fly and their new teammates and everything else. And I think those are the ones where it's like, man, how depleted is our room? Do we need another healthy body back here?
Now, Stu, I generally agree with you that I think this will normalize a little bit. I do think you're right, Bruce, that coaches will try to strike that balance over time. There may be some coaches that brand themselves as we're a portal school, and we this is how we build, and I'll be fascinated to see, can you be consistently successful doing that and build up the infrastructure to be very good at that. I do think that one thing that's feeding all this, so if you'd asked me last in August of 2020, is the eligibility freeze a good thing? I'd say, yeah, this is fantastic. I'm glad that with this really uncertain season we're about to go through in 2020, I'm glad that we're giving this benefit to players that this year won't count towards their eligibility because we didn't know if we could get through a season. And in some leagues, they got through half a season, right? Or delayed start or whatever. But, in the moment, that felt like the right thing to do, and I think it was. What it is leading to, though, is that applied to every player. And these schools still have to get back to 85. And so I think for the next few years, we are going to see the effect of that in terms of seniors who have that extra year going into the portal and going to play somewhere else for one more year because they want to take advantage of it. And even if they played their entire 2020 season, it doesn't matter. They still get that extra year. And so we are going to have these guys who are 5 and 6 year starters or whatever. And I think we are going to have this for the next few years that there's going to be more of these kind of players going into the portal, and I'm sure the competition for them will be pretty intense.
You're going to have more career arcs like that of Hunter Johnson, the former. He went from Clemson, got beat out by Trevor Lawrence, transfers to Northwestern. Started a few games. Wasn't the greatest quarterback in Northwestern history by any means, and now he's using his COVID year to transfer back to Clemson to, I assume, kind of start transitioning into coaching because he's not going to win the Clemson starting quarterback job. So, yeah, some of these guys' career journeys over the next few years are going to be wild.
Absolutely.
We could talk about this topic all day, and it's certainly not a one-time topic either. I mean, this will be...
Are you booting Max off the show? Is this what you're doing?
We got to get some mailbag questions, Bruce. We can't desert the listeners. They
Max,
deserve to have their mailbag questions.
I want to keep you on.
I just want to say, It's really been an honor to be on this podcast. You guys haven't invited me to be on here since 2018, and I don't know.
He's keeping score.
Well, I just assumed I got banned. I didn't know what I did on the last episode that I was on that led you guys to say like, "Oof, this guy can't hang at this
that's
level
crazy.
Of podcasting."
That's by no but means intentional.
I don't know.
Level with him, Stu. You got to tell him what he did.
I don't know how I got banned. And Stu, Bruce, I assume you were the one that talked Stu into unbanning me. And
I can't believe we didn't
that.
Have you on during the expansion Big 12 realignment craziness.
I think you guys at some point just decided, he's more of an Andy Staples pod kind of guy. He can't really hang at this level, and
that's Ari.
I understand. There's that's how radio works. It's probably
Ari's,
how podcasts
Ari's
work.
Ari's Andy's guy. I don't think
Max, you don't see it, but over Stu's shoulder is his own whiteboard. Your face is on there. It just says the Fish of Filet guy. It's like these are like there's a divided line.
There's tears. I get it. There's tears.
This has been an interesting moment. I got to be more careful. What else have you been tracking, Max? what else do you have up on your whiteboard?
I think it was a podcast about, I think we were trying to like, it was like a summer one. We were talking about like Heisman favorites or something like that. And maybe if I had picked the right one that year, I think it was the year Kyler won. It's been that long. Maybe if I had picked the right one then I would have been invited back. So I apologize for failing you guys.
I'm actually surprised it was so recent. I actually thought it was when we were talking to you about, I thought Stu purged you back when we were asking you about like, do you think Heupel can win a Heisman for OU? So I thought it's been that
Max
long.
Max was like 8 years old then. I don't think that goes that far back.
10, Stu.
Belldozer, maybe, okay. Stu. How about that?
No, seriously. I really appreciate this opportunity to be redeemed here.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll put it in writing now. So May 1st, by the way, we didn't mention this. May 1st is the key date. That if you want to play right away by next year, you got to be in the portal by May 1st. So I have a feeling the week leading up to May 1st is going to be madness. So we'll have you back then.
Wow, that would be amazing. Thank you so much.
Don't hold your breath, Max. He's going to be bad-mouthing you as soon as that little window pops off.
Well, this was the risk I took in bringing it up. I thought it could get me banned again. But, I did want to at least express my appreciation.
There's only – Bruce, have we ever actually banned anybody from the podcast?
I haven't. Go ahead.
You haven't. No, I haven't. There's a couple not officially. There's a couple that I brought up to you said no way. But this was just an oversight.
That's okay.
All right, Max, thanks so much. And Athletic subscribers or wannabe subscribers, you can keep, there's no better way to keep up on all the transfer portal movement with our tracker that Max is updating every day. So thanks, Max.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Bruce, as always, the listeners should send their emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. Now that it's the off season, I believe we will be leaning in heavily to your questions for content to keep us going through the off season. The first one comes from Kevin M. in West Lynn, Oregon. Is Oregon choosing Dan Lanning the highest risk-reward hiring of this cycle? And why is the answer yes?
It's an interesting question because obviously you have a coordinator who just come off leading, helping Georgia win a national title. I think why I would think risk-reward, the thing that was curious to me about Dan Lanning getting the job is just the last two guys that Oregon has hired have no real connections to that area. Both Willie Taggart and Mario Cristobal were Florida guys. Dan Lanning's definitely not from the West Coast. Now he spent a little time there at ASU, but so you wonder if things go pretty well for him, you know, does he get lured away for another job? Because that's what's happened with the last two. I mean, that's if it goes well. So on that standpoint, it was a little bit of a head scratcher for me that they would hire somebody who didn't have more of a connection to the West Coast or to the program.
I was wondering if by risk he meant some of the hires he's made on his staff who have previous NCAA issues in their past. Does he mean by risk? Risk of the program going on probation?
I didn't think he meant that way, but you know, look, at this point I feel like the NCAA
is toothless.
Yeah, I honestly, and I'd be surprised if like that would be a fear or a consideration for a university to, you know, who gets hired on whose staff.
The guys I'm referring to, Tosh Lupoy, was investigated by the NCAA when he was at Washington. Obviously, he went on to Alabama. And Adrian Clem actually got slapped on the wrist by the NCAA when he was at UCLA. But I think the reward that he would be referring to is that Dan Lanning was the coordinator of the most dominant defense college football has seen in a long, long time. Some of the stats around that defense are just absolutely insane. They gave up 13 touchdowns in 15 games, four of which came in one game. So 9 touchdowns in the other 14 games. And a lot of those were in garbage time. So obviously the hope here is that he's going to turn Oregon into a defensive juggernaut like that. Now, the only problem I would say is, do we really know how much of that was Dan Lanning and how much of it was Kirby Smart?
Or how much was that they had a ridiculous amount of talent there in the front seven?
Yes, they had a ridiculous amount of talent in the front seven. And again, Rob Mullins hasn't really come out and said this, the AD at Oregon. But, I mean, they got a taste of that with Mario Cristobal. They got a taste of, instead of the Chip Kelly, Mark Helfrich kind of overachieving, if you will, relative to recruiting rankings, Mario brought in top 10 classes, 5-star guys, the Kayvon Thibodeaux of the world, and all, you know, due to or given the way Georgia recruited when Lanning was there, you know, I think the hope is that he will continue that, if not get even better in terms of bringing in high-end talent.
Let me ask you a question. Give me, you know, the two biggest names in this hiring cycle were Lincoln Riley going to USC, Brian Kelly going to Notre Dame. Give me a hire. I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Give me a hire. And then we can, you know, maybe take Billy Napier out of Florida on this. Give me a hire that maybe is not one of those three. Cause I know we like the Billy Napier hire both, that you think, man, I think that's a hire that is a really good fit and probably people haven't talked enough about. And a hire, while you're looking at the list, and a hire that you're very intrigued how it goes.
Gosh, just looking at this list, you realize just how many coaching changes there were this year. A lot. I think Kalen DeBoer could do well at Washington.
That is the higher, I would say. That wasn't the one I was going to say is the one that I think was a home, the big home run.
Well, I would actually say, as I'm looking at this list, there are a lot I am very curious about. There are a lot of, for instance, you know, Texas Tech went out and got Joey McGuire. I think that was one of the first ones, if not the first one. And he's not exactly a big name, but they clearly saw something there where they went out and got that done. Sonny Dykes succeeding Gary Patterson at TCU. By the way, did you see the pictures from the basketball, Texas basketball game last night?
Yes, I did. It's
Gary Patterson, on a level of 1 to 10, how much would you say Gary Patterson hated Texas when he was at TCU?
98. We saw Gary Patterson in San Antonio at the convention, talked to him for a while the first night I was there. And this is going to be an interesting fit with him as a special assistant to the head coach.
So for people who aren't aware of what we're talking about, Gary Patterson has joined the support staff, if you will, at Texas. And he was at the...
Yeah. I'm sorry, yeah.
He was at the Texas basketball game on Tuesday night, and there are pictures of him talking to Chris Del Conte.
His old boss.
Who used to be his boss at TCU, now his boss again at Texas. And he's wearing the Longhorn swag. And it's so crazy to see. I know sometimes... Again, he couldn't have hated them more. He took such glee in beating them, and now he is working with Sark at Texas. It should be – it's going to be interesting. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you look at a lot of these names.
Give me one higher that
Jim
you really
Mora
like.
Early in the offseason. Or not early. Early in his tenure at UConn. Give me one higher that I really like, and it can't be – you said it can't be Lincoln Riley, Brian Kelly, or Billy Napier.
Correct.
Right?
Yes, correct. I'm sorry.
Those were the ground rules. I do really like Cristobal. I feel like after all of the, you know, Miami has cycled through coach after coach after coach looking for the right fit, and nobody is more Miami than Mario Cristobal, South Florida than Mario Cristobal, and while they didn't ultimately take that next step up the rung and make the playoff, they did have a lot of success the last few years at Oregon. So is he the guy that can finally get, if he can't get them back to being the U, I don't know who can.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say it is Joe Moorhead at Akron. It's not far from where he's from in Pittsburgh. I think, you know, he did extremely well at Fordham. He did okay, but not good enough at Mississippi State, and it was just a bad fit. But I think he will do exceptionally well there. So that would be my.
I think he will too. But are you telling me are you gonna be a close? You been watching a lot of Akron games this coming season?
I will, because they're on the weekend. They're on the weekdays and they're at odd times.
Oh yeah, that's
true.
Yeah,
I watch probably more MAC than I watched. Look, I watched a bunch of Mountain West because it would be on Friday nights on like CBS Sports Network. You know, so
I did watch a bit. I mean, they also had a lot of late night Saturday night games opposite the Pac-12 After Dark.
Yeah.
Thanks to your network. Walter from LA. Hi, Stu and Bruce. Love the pod. Thank you. Looking back on the past season, who was the best team with the worst record? There's one really obvious answer to this, and I'm wondering if you're gonna go there.
The best team with the worst record. Penn State was 7-6. That's not a great record.
It's not a great record, but do you actually think they were a really good team?
Considering where they were, and then they were, you know, they were beating Iowa, then the quarterback gets hurt, and then it's just kind of, I don't think they were a top five team, but I think they could have been a top 15 team. You know, Texas A&M is sitting there. They were 25th in the coaches poll. They were 8-4. They beat Alabama, but they were unranked in the other poll. They're going to have a ton of draft picks, but they had shaky quarterback play. And they lost to LSU to go 8-4, and they didn't get to play in a bowl game. I would go with them, Texas A&M.
Okay. And there's a good that's a good answer, but they weren't bad. Nebraska went 3-9. They won one Big Ten game, and that was against Northwestern, who themselves won one Big Ten game. On the surface, that would be like, gosh, that must have been a terrible team. But because they lost so many close games, they actually, in Bill Connolly's final SP rankings, they were 37th in the country. They were a top 40 team. They went 3-9. In fact, they finished.
But what were they based?
10-4 Oregon.
What were they based as a top 40 team on?
On the way they played.
I know, but like
the
SEC
rankings. The S&P doesn't measure wins and losses. It measures how you performed over the course of the game. And they had a lot of games where they played well enough to win and then found a way to blow it at the end. Against some really good teams, by the way. You know, Michigan, who ends up winning the Big Ten and going to the playoff. That was a loss on a two-point conversion.
I don't think you were going to look back at this 2021 Nebraska team and find out there was a ton of, like, NFL talent on it, though.
Probably not. No, I wouldn't think so. And I'm not saying that they, if they cut a couple breaks, they would have been 9-3 by any means. But they lost 9 games, and here were some of the scores. 30-22 to Illinois. 23-16 to Oklahoma, who ended up winning 11 games. 23-20 in overtime to Michigan State, who won 11 games. 32-29 to Michigan. That's, by the way, I mixed it up. Michigan State was the two-point conversion game. Michigan, Big Ten champion Michigan, 32-29. Iowa, last game of the season, they really should have won that game. Lost 28-21, lost by a touchdown to Wisconsin. So they were a competitive team. They did not have a single blowout loss, but they did lose 9 games. So that's why that's my answer to that question.
All right, Stu, next question from Josh Fiery in Elk City, Oklahoma. Hey, guys, love the podcast. I am an OU fan and honestly feel like we are in a better place to succeed after Lincoln Riley's departure than before his departure. We were slowly regressing every year under Riley, and I feel like Brent Venables is going to bring back physical football. I don't think the offense will regress much under Jeff Lebby. Am I crazy to feel we are better off in the long run?
Well, I wouldn't say crazy. It's certainly possible, but that does feel like one of those things you say to yourself when you know things seem to be going really poorly and you want to believe that they're not going as poorly as everybody's making it seem. I mean, at the end of the day, Lincoln Riley took you to 3 playoffs, produced Heisman-winning quarterbacks, number one draft pick quarterbacks. This is not an easy guy to replace. Now, you're bringing in a guy in Brent Venables who you have familiarity with, who had a tremendous run as Clemson's defensive coordinator. I do think he'll bring back physical football. I do think Oklahoma, for the first time in ages, will have a defense they can feel proud of. But are you going to consistently win 10, 11 games every year like you were under Lincoln Riley? Probably not. Although it's hard to, you know, they're going to go to the SEC and it's going to be harder no matter who the coach was. So to say they were regressing under Lincoln Riley, yes, they didn't make the playoff the last 2 years, but they went 11-2 last year. They didn't fall off the face of the earth.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Stu. I was going to make the point about the SEC as well, that they're going into it, so it's going to be a little tougher to grade. Like, it's going to be more of an uphill climb for Brent Venables in a couple of years because it's just a much tougher league he's going into. And I think maybe they're better positioned with Brent Venables and his approach to go into it than they might have been with Lincoln Riley. It's not like a Lincoln Riley, yes, he came from the Air Raid tree, but he's not what Mike does. I mean, he's very different in terms of the emphasis on the run game is much more a focus of what they want to do. So I don't know. I think Venables has put together a good staff. Everything I've heard there has been very positive in it. I think ultimately it's going to be how much better can he recruit on defense than what they did in the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, because that was an issue. They were not good enough in the back end to hold up. And they weren't big enough, they weren't good enough. Now they have some of those guys, but now they need more of them. And I think if he can upgrade that aspect of it, then he has a chance. But man, the bar is going to be high, because they weren't just so good, like you said, Stu, at developing quarterbacks. They've had some elite receivers tear up the Big 12 and guys who've gone on to the NFL and been stars. I mean, CeeDee Lamb, Mark Andrews, you've got a lot of playmakers who've come through there in recent years. And so you got to sustain that. What'll be interesting, and this is kind of a little bit in the weeds, but like one of the knocks on as prolific as the system that Jeff Lebby's coming from is, you know, some of the receivers who've come from that system have really underwhelmed when they've, you know, gone on to the NFL. It's not to say that the system doesn't work, you know, isn't effective in college, but I think that will be something to keep an eye on, because you know, is that going to be something that will get recruited against them, right? I mean, I think that's that's a point that's out there in coaching circles.
You know, one of the, it was kind of going around at the national title game, but, you know, we thought last summer for sure, there's no way Oklahoma and Texas are going to stay in the Big 12 for another 4 years. And what's starting to become apparent is at least OU is not looking to get out early. They're content to wait till 2025. They don't want to pay all that money. And I don't know if this is part of the reasoning or not, but this does give you a nice opportunity. Brent Venables, a nice opportunity to ramp up, to go through several recruiting cycles of possibly transforming the roster to fit better in the SEC. Because at the end of the day, he had some really good teams that ran through the Big 12 and then got to the playoff and got killed by an LSU, right? So a more physical team with certainly better players in the defensive front. You've got Jeff Levy, who has shown you can run a, you know, really wide open offense in the SEC. Yeah, maybe he's the guy more so than Lincoln Riley to turn them into more of an SEC team or SEC ready team. But man, that is a, those are some tough, that is a tough act to follow. Well, let's put it that way. Michael Donlin says, with Deion Sanders pulling such high-level talent to Jackson State, how long before, and I assume he means FBS schools, start courting him? Which schools do you think would be interested, and do you think he would be interested?
I think he would be interested in, and the one that will be very interesting to keep an eye on, and I, look, I think there were some rumblings about Mike Norvell's tenure at Florida State. He's gone heavy in the portal. He's done pretty well in the portal, but he's got to win soon, right? And I think, you know, he hasn't been in a bowl game yet. He's 8-13 in 2 years. He had a really rough start to 2021. Deion has been open about his intrigue and the situation there in Tallahassee. I think they'll keep winning. You know, if like he goes from 3 wins to 5 wins and gets them to 7 or 8, I think that would be encouraging enough to Florida State. But if he has another year where they don't go to a bowl game, I think that would be very hard for them to be like, okay, we're going to ride it out. Especially if Deion, look, Deion was like the FCS coach of the year. If he keeps winning and keeps getting big recruits, I could see there being a lot of push. Right now, or at least for the first, you know, half of Deion's relatively brief tenure, FCS, has really come from people he knows in NFL circles talking about like why people are making a mistake by not hiring Deion. And a lot of them have been, you know, like what they've said, Deion's been a lot better than most people who were skeptical have thought. I think if he keeps doing that and Florida State doesn't get it going soon, I think that would be a very there'll be a lot of pressure put on Florida State to go, you guys need to bring Deion home.
But what happened on signing day of him not just pulling the number one recruit in the country would have been a big deal no matter who the guy was, but the fact that he was a Florida State commit was kind of like an audition for that Florida State job. And I agree, Mike Norvell's going to be under tremendous pressure, because not only will there be calls for his job, there will be calls for a very specific candidate to replace him. And I have no doubt there will be a strong push for Deion if that situation plays out. But I also don't think Deion, we should mention, has interviewed for a few FBS jobs, including TCU. So he's already on some AD's radars. At least he was already on some AD's radars even before that signing day, you know, massive headline that I'm sure is going to make even more schools take him seriously. The last one from Michael Galvin in Agoura Hills, California. With the news coming out about Todd Graham, who resigned from Hawaii late last week after just nonstop, I feel like over the last month, former players coming out and alleging mistreatment. How did this guy have top level jobs to begin with? It sounds like it was an open secret in the coaching world. How did this get past all of his ADs, including the current one?
Well, as it relates to the current one at Hawaii, from everything I've heard, there's just a staggering amount of incompetence in that athletic program. And really, just it has very limited resources. Todd Graham, for all his faults, and we're going to get into some of them in a minute, you know, at least he won some games, you know, on the field. I think the aspect of him being in control, he was such a bad fit in terms of culturally out there. You hear a lot of stories about how, and a lot came out on that Friday night 3-hour meeting, but there's a lot of other stuff that hasn't come out about. And this has been, like, I remember when he got to ASU, and I felt like I got a lot of, you know, at least on social media, blowback from fans, because I was pretty critical, because all the people I've heard from who've either coached with him or played for him or worked around him, who the only other coach that I know of in major college football over the last decade who has as close to a bad reputation amongst his peers as Todd Graham does is Bobby Petrino. It's like those two. And there's like a gulf between. I'm not saying, like, it's pretty rare where you won't find other coaches to have something negative to say about somebody in the business. But like the depth of the disdain for Todd Graham and about what they think of him, like Petrino's the only one I've heard who kind of gets, you know, is into that space. And Petrino, you know, he's won a lot more games. So I think that's why he ended up getting some probably better jobs and still was getting jobs. But it's, you know, you talk to you talk to a lot of people who've worked with him, and it is next level venom you get.
Yeah, and it's not just coaches. It's people who've covered him, TV people. Like, there's rarely anybody that just, like, has so many people that come into contact with him are just totally turned off. Now, so to me, to his question, that speaks to how little vetting the Hawaii AD must have done. Because it should not have taken many phone calls. I'm sure Todd Graham has friends and people in the profession he's worked with who vouch for him. But it doesn't seem to me it would have taken many phone calls to find people who are like, no, you don't want to do that. And here's why. I think he probably got caught up in, oh, this guy was a Pac-12 head coach. By the way, people forget this, but ASU fans were not pleased when they fired him. I think, you know, that kind of went away once they got Herm Edwards, but they felt like he was doing a good job. But to your point about fit, I mean, I've spent a lot of time in Hawaii. We go every year, and, you know, you get a window into this also through, even if you've never been to Hawaii, if you think of Marcus Mariota or some of the other players that have come from there. The people on that in Hawaii are the nicest, most welcoming people, and I just can't think of better, worse fit in terms of personality than for him to go in and coach a bunch of guys in Hawaii. And wow, I mean, the pylon. They had a hearing. They had a state Senate hearing about this guy. That's how troubling it was to people.
Yeah.
As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com, and we'll keep coming back at you every week this offseason. We'll see you next time.